Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, October 10th, 2023. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals quickly decides to reconsider three-judge panel's decision last week to allow Idaho to enforce a law that makes it a felony for emergency doctors to give abortion care to save the health of the mother. Moscow committee recommends changes to city's solid waste contract. Moscow eyes ladder fire truck and more targeted anti-LGBTQ vandalism in Spokane, once again targeting the Odyssey youth movement on South Perry Street, which has had three such incidents in the last week. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has said it will reconsider a decision late last month by a three-judge panel to allow Idaho's strict anti-abortion law to go into effect. The U.S. Justice Department sued the state of Idaho in the summer of 2022, saying the law, which makes it a felony for emergency room doctors to give abortion care to save the health of a mother, violates the Federal Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act. That law requires medical facilities that receive Medicaid funding to stabilize the patient. U.S. District Judge B. Lynn Windmill in Boise blocked the law from taking effect in August of last year, pending an appeal. The state of Idaho appealed to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. The Idaho Capital Sun reports after last month's ruling by the three-judge panel, senior counsel for St. Luke's Hospital issued a statement that if a pregnant woman comes to the emergency room or was in a labor or delivery unit with complications, the hospital would examine the woman, and if abortion was the recommended treatment, the abortion would be performed only if doctors could determine it would prevent the death of the patient. If a termination was necessary to protect the pregnant patient's health, even long-term health or fertility, the patient could potentially be transferred to an out-of-state hospital. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals order issued today says there will be an on-bank hearing in which 10 of the circuit court's 28 judges would be chosen at random to hear the case again. The Ninth Circuit Court's chief judge would preside over the hearings. The three-judge panel removed Judge Windmill's narrow block on the law September 20th. Emergency room physicians have objected to the law because it's difficult to parse out whether an abortion is needed to protect the life of the mother or the health of the mother, and because the health complications from not ending a pregnancy can be debilitating and permanent. The U.S. Justice Department sued last year, saying Idaho's abortion law is unconstitutional because it violates the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act, which requires facilities that receive Medicare funds to treat and stabilize anyone during an emergency. U.S. District Judge B. Lynn Windmill in Boise granted a narrow preliminary injunction in August of last year prohibiting the prosecution of medical professionals who provide abortions in emergency situations. The state of Idaho appealed, with attorneys the Idaho legislature hired signing on as a friend of the court to argue against the injunction at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals level alongside lawyers with the Attorney General's office. The Idaho Press reports Ninth Circuit Judge Lawrence Van Dyke wrote in his decision September 29th, attorneys for the legislature made a strong case the law does not violate the Federal Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act. Judges Bridge Bade and Kenneth Lee concurred. People vandalized the Odyssey youth movement on South Perry Street in Spokane for the third time in a week overnight Friday by spray painting slurs and hate speech across the windows, door, the front of the building, and the organization's sign. It was the fourth incident of vandalism at the Odyssey Youth Movement in a month's time. Besides the spray painting, someone threw the books from a community library outside the center all over the porch. Someone also ripped down a neighbor's pride flag and threw it on the ground outside the center. The Odyssey Youth Movement is designed to be a safe place for LGBTQ youth and provides outreach. Western States Center program manager and extremism expert Kate Bitz told the Spokesman Review, "What we're looking at is partially a local example of a national dynamic. There's an anti-democracy political movement that really has been exploiting homophobia and transphobia for political gain." Friday night was the second night in a row the Odyssey Youth Movement was vandalized. Vandals also tried to deface the Pride crosswalk in front of Odyssey Saturday night with black paint, but according to the Spokesman Review, a passerby interrupted them. But the vandals left black paint tire marks all over the South Perry Street Pride flag crosswalk. It's the third vandalism attack on the South Perry crosswalk in less than a month. In late September, people spray-painted graffiti on the crosswalk, and they vandalized the crosswalk with white paint Thursday night of last week. Odyssey Executive Director Ian Sullivan told the paper, "The vandalism is about trying to demoralize and target the queer community." Sullivan said, "We're going to be doing a pop-up Pride event on Thursday here and throughout the neighborhood, so it's a chance for folks to come out in all of their Pride gear and with their friends, their family, and really to kind of spin this back to what it should be, which is a story about inclusion and representation, not vandalism." Bitz pointed to the multiple anti-trans bills that have passed or have been introduced in the Idaho legislature. She says Idaho is a state where think tanks mobilize bigotry that finds a reception among political leaders who mischaracterize LGBTQ people. Bitz said Idaho is the place where bigoted movements have built their most political power. She said, "That means when I see leaders or people like the Idaho Freedom Foundation engaging in demagoguery at trans people, I know I'm going to see that 6 months later here. As a consequence, we've seen violence. Words matter." The Idaho Freedom Foundation, a conservative think tank, has called transgender or non-binary terms radical ideology on its website. A 20-year-old former Washington State University student submitted an Alford plea in a case where he was accused of rape in Whitman County Superior Court Friday. A plea deal changed Roman Petruncio's charge to misdemeanor fourth-degree assault with sexual motivation. Alford pleas happen when a defendant maintains their innocence but admit the prosecution has enough evidence to convict. Washington State University police responded to a dispute at Duncan Dunn Hall dormitory in the early morning hours of September 22nd last year. The victim told police she believed she had been raped while passed out after drinking. She had met Petruncio at a party earlier in the evening and police arrested him for second-degree assault. Petruncio said in court the contact was consensual. Court Commissioner Doug Robinson sentenced Petruncio to 2 weeks in jail and 1 year probation. Petruncio said in court he is pursuing a degree at another college. The Moscow City Council's Public Works Finance Committee yesterday recommended the city approve amendments to the city's solid waste franchise agreement with Latah Sanitation Incorporated because of inflation causing expenditures surpassing adjustments for compensation based on the Consumer Price Index. City Sanitation Director Tim Davis explained.
Staff has engaged in discussions with Latah Sanitation over the past year or so regarding several different aspects of the existing franchise agreement, in which their present expenditures are surpassing the annual consumer price index adjustments that they receive annually. Staff requested and received data from Latah Sanitation that would demonstrate the increases in replacement carts for both roll carts as well as dumpsters. Staff assessment of that data provided confirmed that indeed the current compensation structure is not adequately accounting for the rising costs associated with replacement costs for the roll carts or the dumpsters. Other points of note in the amended agreement is the request from Latah Sanitation regarding fuel relief. You may recall that staff developed a fuel relief model after receiving the same request from Findlay Buttes Partnership this past year. Staff has applied the same method for fuel relief to Latah Sanitation. Fuel is a large component of city collection services as well as the services out at the landfill. The fuel relief model adjusts the base fuel index each year based off of 50% of the consumer price index, so that gets adjusted annually. Fuel relief is granted when fuel costs exceed 115% of that base fuel index, and then relief is basically the difference between what the actual fuel cost is and what the 115% is. On the other hand, the city will receive a fuel credit when fuel prices fall below 85% of that base fuel index. The fuel relief model is applied retroactively to January of 2022. Staff also incorporated into this amendment a request from Latah Sanitation to fully assume responsibility for the roll-off container services and associated billing with those services. Inland Northwaste is also proposing to take on the direct customer billing for roll-off container services. The city currently conducts monthly billing of these services, which can be confusing to the customers and, quite frankly, a duplication of efforts. Inland Northwaste initiates the process at the customer's request, conducts all service management and record keeping throughout the process, and provides calculation of charges for these services to the city. The city will, however, retain the proceeds from the tonnage fees from these roll-off services across the scales out there.
That was Moscow City Sanitation Director Tim Davis speaking at yesterday's City Council Public Works Committee meeting. Deputy City Supervisor Tyler Palmer told the committee besides the solid waste franchise agreement adjustments, city staff is discussing possible future changes to solid waste collection with Latah Sanitation.
For example, we're in possession of a new proposal for 200 and 300 gallon containers that we would really love to see added, and it appears to be a pretty reasonable proposal. And so that's something that Tim and I will be working with Brandon and his staff to put together to bring before council as an additional option that will help us clean up some difficult to service areas, provide some flexibility, for example, in downtown or where we have a lot of density. You know, adding density is a really good thing, but when you have to add 15 roll carts to accommodate the density, it can get pretty ugly. And so things, so there are still things, we'll continue to be working on things, but as far as the franchise agreement goes, we think that we've covered what we need to cover for a while with this.
That was Deputy Moscow City Supervisor Tyler Palmer. The Council's Public Works Committee put the Solid Waste Franchise Agreement amendments on the consent agenda for the October 16th City Council meeting. Moscow City Supervisor Bill Belknap told a City Council committee yesterday the city should get in line to purchase a new $1.5 million ladder truck for the fire department so it can take advantage of early payment discounts and make sure the old truck is replaced in a timely manner. Belknap said the University of Idaho has agreed to pay half the cost of the truck from Hughes Fire Equipment. Belknap told the City Council's Public Works Finance Committee the city has moved forward extending its agreement with the Galveston-Houston Public Purchasing Consortium to get a better price on the ladder truck.
Authorizing the mayor to sign a renewed agreement to participate in that program, and that cost is $1,549,896. That is after a prepayment discount. And so there are a number of prepayment discounts you can see on the quote. You can pay in full. You can pay when the chassis gets delivered. You can pay before it leaves the factory. But if you add all of those discounts together, you can save $162,564. So that is already off that price. So the $1.5 million is after that discount has been applied. The quote that we've been provided is valid through October 27th of this year. It would require full payment by the end of October 2024 to receive all of the prepayment discounts, that $162,000 in discounts. Currently, the lead time or the estimated delivery time from the place of order is 42 to 47 months. So we're looking at about 4 years.
Wow.
And so there's no financial obligation right now for us to sign the purchase agreement and get in the queue. We wouldn't have to make a payment for a year. Okay. And so the fire chief, Brian, has asked that we go ahead and do that so we can get in line. He's concerned that that queue could lengthen.
That was Moscow City Supervisor Bill Belknap speaking to the Public Works Finance Committee yesterday. The Pullman City Council has put an item on the agenda of tonight's meeting on the possibility of redesigning the Walk of Fame project as part of the Project Downtown Revitalization project. The City Council held a meeting October 3rd addressing Project Downtown that was not noticed on the city website, and so far video of that meeting has not been made available on the city's website or YouTube page, as happens with all other City Council meetings. Tonight's agenda item says, after reviewing the community discussion from September 26th and the City Council discussion from October 3rd, staff believes the following options are available for action. Leave the bid document for the Walk of Fame as is, remove the item from the base bid and make it a bid alternative, creating the choice to award later as part of the project, remove the item from the bid entirely, or remove the item from the bid entirely and ask staff to work with the Hall of Fame committee to explore different alternatives and report back to the City Council. Besides the planned removal of all the ash trees in downtown Pullman as part of the consultant Welch Comer's plans for the revitalization project, the configuration and placement of the Wall of Fame was the other controversial issue involved in the planned project downtown. Tonight's agenda says, since there is no clear scope provided for a redesign coming from the previous meetings, the discussions with Welch Comer remain ongoing through the end of the current week and into the beginning of next week ahead of this agenda item. Redesign elements such as timeline delay, additional cost expectations, and changes in required reporting to the State Department of Transportation cannot be provided in more certain terms at the time of this writing. The council plans to continue discussion from the previous meeting tonight. The Pullman City Council will hold a public hearing tonight on Pullman Transit's 6-year development plan. The council is also scheduled to vote on accepting a pre-design report for a Pullman Transit facility master plan from TCF Architecture. The council also has two discussion items on tonight's agenda. One is the 2024 legislative priorities, and the other is the City Council's draft code of conduct. The Pullman City Council will meet at 7 p.m. tonight at City Hall. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, it will be rainy tonight, 90% chance of rain, mainly before midnight, low 40. 60% chance of rain tomorrow, mainly in the afternoon, mostly cloudy, high 53. 40% chance of rain Wednesday night, mainly before 2 a.m., patchy fog after 8 p.m., otherwise mostly cloudy, low 36. And a 20% chance of rain before noon Thursday, areas of fog before 10 a.m., otherwise partly sunny, high 56. Currently 50 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for low income or students. You can also go to the KRFP.org website to find out more ways to help KRFP. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online. We've got a noise filter episode, Flashpoints coming up next, and then Rude Awakening is on live in the studio, 7:30 to 9:30. Stay tuned for more.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by Hotchins Drug and Hobby of 307 South Main Street in Moscow. Hotchins features a pharmacy, educational toys, and hobbies. Hotchins also sells and services hearing aids. You can call Hotchins at 208-882-5536.
California hopes to create policy that will effectively bring down the cost of the drug.
Discovered in the early 1920th century, insulin proved to be a life-saving medication for people suffering from diabetes. The methods of synthesizing insulin were discovered by John McClade, Charles Best, and James Collip, who were awarded patents for their discovery. All three of the men sold their patents to the University of Toronto for $1 each in the hopes of providing easy access to those who needed it. Now, those, my friends, were true clinicians, physicians, or scientists who just did not want to make any money for what they did. Like, that is the ultimate in selfless and providing selfless care for individuals, especially those that are suffering.
In practice, insulin became another victim of the healthcare system in the U.S., with the main manufacturer and pharmacy benefit managers giving no clear information on the actual cost of the drug. By keeping the true cost of the drug opaque, these manufacturers and pharmacy benefit managers have increased the price of insulin to a price many people cannot afford.
The market for insulin is controlled by a few companies. Eli Lilly, Novo Nordisk, and Sanofi manufacture about 90% of the global supply of insulin. CVS Health, Express Scripts, and OptumRx manage about 80% of the sales in the U.S. These companies are responsible for nearly all the production and distribution of insulin and are therefore in almost complete control of the price that customers pay.
A study performed by GoodRx found that the average insulin retail price rose 54% between 2014 and 2019. Further data shows that the average list price for a vial of insulin in the U.S. is about $200. Wow. Prices were even higher for pre-filled injectable pens.
Although pharmacy benefit manufacturers claim that they exist to reduce costs for customers, many of these lawsuits are targeting them. It is unclear at this point who's to blame for the rising costs of life-saving drugs, but this lawsuit will hopefully pull back the curtain on U.S. prescription drug market and how it's choosing profit over patient health. Well, this is a theme we talk about here on COVID, on Noise Filter all the time. And again, you know, what do we live in a society that puts profits over people, and it's hard for us as individuals to see that, to say that, and to acknowledge it, but that's just really the truth. It's just hard to really comment more on the story. We've talked about so many different examples of this. Here, they sold it for a dollar each, and they ended up, you know, had they held on to it and managed it themselves, they would have been better off. But they, of course, thought that they were doing what they were doing. And this is just the effects of late stage capitalism. And that's all there is to it.
Thanks for listening to Noise Filter, your public health podcast.
Be sure to subscribe to the Noise Filter podcast. Follow us on social media and leave us a review letting us know your favorite part of the show.
You can find me, Hope Pickerson, at hopepickerson.com.
And you can find me at Dr. Mark Allen Derry or at The Dr. Derry. That's D-R-D-E-R-Y.
To see and share our amazing animations and find out more information about us, the show, as well as links to our social media, go to noisefiltershow.com.
We are grateful to our sponsors, including Access Health Louisiana and the End the Epidemic Initiative, who are working to bring equitable health outcomes to everyone they serve. Hope, any last words?
Stay well out there, folks, and continue taking steps to keep yourself and your loved ones healthy. That includes exercise, a good diet, getting adequate sleep, and seeing your healthcare providers regularly.
And protect yourself and others by getting the COVID-19 vaccine and booster, wearing a mask, and social distancing wherever possible. Remember, health is a human right.
It's a birthday party!
Join us to celebrate KRFP, Radio Free Moscow's 19th birthday.
Friday, October 13th, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. in Mikey's Euro's back room, baby.
527 North Main Street, Moscow, Idaho. Meet volunteer DJs, show hosts, and other listeners and supporters.
There will be a birthday cake.
Some great promotional bumper stickers.
KRFP t-shirts.
And coffee.
KRFP presents the first of two call-in Moscow City Council candidate forums this coming Wednesday night at 6:30 p.m. We'll have three of the candidates for City Council in our studio for an hour to take your phone calls at 208-892-9200. This Wednesday the 11th, we'll have Bryce Blankenship, Joe Campbell, and Drew Davis. Tune in and call in this Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. right here on KRFP 90.3.